This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about focaccia.
Woo! You know, this is one of those episodes that we're recording remotely. We're both in Seattle, but on different sides of town. And I am so sad because Matthew made a focaccia.
Okay, so you should be sad because the focaccia I made is delicious. You should also be happy because I baked it in the studio, which was already like 86 degrees. And I had the oven on at 450 for an hour. So think about what you're missing out on.
How does it feel? Was the focaccia worth it?
It kind of was because it came out really well.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it wasn't like my day I ruined with the oven. It was Watzel's because it's her office also. And I was like, man, like, you know, I'm like making you put up with a lot for my dumb podcast. But then she tasted the focaccia and she's like, it was all worth it. And then she left and I don't know if she's coming back.
I mean, I can relate to her.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even show up for the taping today, so I can relate.
That's true.
Okay. So today we're talking about focaccia, the Italian olive oily flatbread.
Yep.
Let's start out on memory lane.
Okay. So I think focaccia is like a thing that reached the average American consumer in the 90s and was very popular for a time.
This checks
out. Not that it's not still popular, but I remember like in the early 90s, I think like maybe at Hot Lips Pizza or maybe like one of the delis in Portland, like Elephant's Delicatessen, I started getting focaccia and really enjoyed it. It was like super thick and fluffy, probably had some rosemary or other herbs in there and lots of olive oil. And I was like, this is the new bread for me.
You know, it's interesting. I was about to say that I feel like focaccia arrived in the early 90s along with Northern Italian food.
Absolutely.
But focaccia is not from Northern Italy.
Right? I don't actually know where. So it's the
well, like
kind of
Puglia,
focaccia we eat.
Basilicata, those are further south.
That's Southern Italy. But the American, the focaccia that we are most likely to get, that you're most likely to see outside of Italy, period, is Ligurian focaccia, which is central Italy.
You know what? Let's look at a map of Italy. You
Let's look
pull
at
one
a map
up?
Of Italy. Map okay. of Italy. Oh, no. Genoa, Northern Italy. Look at
oh,
that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, here are the provinces. Okay. Where is Liguria?
It's like in the armpit there. That's how they describe it locally. I'm now going to be just a hero in Italy for describing Genoa as the armpit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that is solidly Italy.
Northern Italy. So like, you know, leavened flatbreads, popular. I mean, I was going to say throughout Italy, popular pretty much throughout the world.
For sure.
And we're going to talk about a lot of regional variations on focaccia, but the kind that people outside of Italy tend to think of like kind of a, you know, 1-inch thick, very bubbly, lots of olive oil and probably some fresh herbs kind of focaccia, Ligurian.
Okay, so this kind of swept into the U.S. around the same time that Northern Italian restaurants got really big. I mean,
yeah,
I remember
fresh
this.
Pasta.
Totally.
What else?
Totally. I feel like
risotto.
Well, things that didn't involve red sauce. So yeah, risotto, fresh pasta with non-tomatoey sauces.
Yeah, I'm making risotto for dinner tonight, and I'm excited because it's going to be like fresh asparagus risotto, but also kind of dreading it. Because do you remember that day we boiled macaroni and cheese, and it got so like hot and sweaty in the studio that we died?
Oh my God, I think that was when I put an ice pack down my shirt.
I think so. Yeah, and we've been ghosts ever since.
Okay, but hold on, because I'm a ghost with a memory, so I'm not done with my memory lane.
That's sort of what ghosts are all about, right?
That's true. Ghosts are like...
You know the old saying, a ghost never forgets.
Okay, well, hang on.
Yeah.
Anyway, I remember focaccia showing up as being this thing that would come out to the table if you were very lucky at a Northern Italian restaurant.
Yeah, they would roll a 20-sided die, and if they got a natural 20, you'd get focaccia at the table.
Hold on. No, if you were at a Northern Italian restaurant, you know, do you remember when this became a thing, when they would bring out bread with olive oil with a little like drop of balsamic in it?
Of course.
Do you remember this? This was like revolutionary in American restaurants in
Absolutely.
The 90s. If you were very lucky, the bread that they brought out was focaccia.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because it prompted more memory lane.
If you were not lucky, it was one of those like sort of more everyday Italian breads that's like doesn't maybe have enough salt and is like just
Tuscan bread.
There we go. So I think that was my first introduction to focaccia, was in restaurants like that. Then when I went to California to go to college, so you know Acme Bakery in Berkeley?
Yes,
you know
I
that
do.
One? Okay.
I don't know why I pronounced yes.
So when I went off to college, this would have been 1997, I remember the first year that I was there at Stanford. I've talked before about getting really into reading the San Francisco Chronicle food section on Wednesdays.
Yes, of course.
But of course, you know, I was like learning what all the good bakeries were. And Acme at the time was like the, would you say it was the Acme of bakeries?
Yeah, they were like, sometimes they would like put a clothes sign in the window because they were off like trying to blow up a roadrunner.
What?
That was the worst fucking dad joke I've ever made.
Okay. But anyway, they made this bread called an herb slab.
One dad in our audience really laughed at that. And I'm using the term in a non-gendered way.
They made this bread called an herb slab. And I remember it as being like a focaccia, but less oily. It had rosemary in it, a good amount of salt, and it was a thick and bubbly flatbread. Mm-hmm. However, I just looked it up today to confirm that it was a focaccia. And no, it is more closely related to a fougasse, which is a different kind of flatbread.
Yeah,
and I think not as oily.
I looked at it though, and like it doesn't have like the like bubbly top of a focaccia because they flip it.
Yeah.
But like it's not an unrelated thing.
But I don't think it has as much olive oil. I mean,
okay.
Focaccia feels like it is a vessel for olive oil.
Sure. Okay, a couple more of my memory lane tributaries. So I was reminded when you said
hold
that.
Hold on, Matthew. Yeah.
Do I think memory lane is a river? Yes.
Well, is memory lane a river? And if so, how do you navigate it? Do you have gondolas?
I've got hella gondolas.
I mean, do you think they have focaccia in Venice, and therefore we can do a little gondola tie-in here with the gondoliers?
We're going to talk about focaccia veneziana. We should do a tie-in. What are like the terms of this? Do we get a free trip to Venice?
This is like one of those bits that like the math was never going to work out.
unlike my hilarious Coyote and Roadrunner bit that totally adds up.
Yeah. Okay. Go on.
I drank a bunch of matcha right before hopping into the studio here. And I think you can probably tell. Mm. Okay. What was I saying?
No idea.
Okay. So you said you're lucky if like you get focaccia coming to the table at a Northern Italian restaurant. There is a restaurant in West Seattle called La Rustica that Lori and I used to go like for special occasions, like an anniversary, like when we were first living in Seattle. maybe 2000-ish. And it's still there. And I guarantee nothing about it has changed except the prices, because it's the kind of place where they would never change the menu. And their house bread was focaccia. It was great.
Wait, and this is in West Seattle?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't believe I've never heard of it. I mean, West Seattle is like another town, but this sounds delightful.
It is delightful, yes. And then my other focaccia memory lane is that around near the beginning of the pandemic, teenager of the show December decided that they wanted to start doing some baking. And the two things that they made kind of their signatures were focaccia and fougasse.
Wow. Matthew, you raised them right.
That's right.
Well done.
I once made, for sure, the Cooks Illustrated. They had their first focaccia recipe that they published, I think, had like mashed potatoes in it, or maybe like instant mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. Not necessary. I mean, okay. It's fine, but.
Yeah. Okay. So hold on. So let's talk about what this stuff is.
Yeah. Let's start by bringing in our friend, Mr. Etymology.
Oh, here he comes.
Okay, so focaccia comes from the Latin word focus, which means hearth. So it is a hearth-baked bread.
Is that what... So focus originally referred to a hearth?
Yeah, because you all like sit around and focus on it.
I wish that like the hearth were more a focus of our days. These days.
I mean, you have, I was going to say you have a fireplace. We also have a fireplace. I just forgot about it because we've never successfully used it.
Wait, but, you guys have been there like 15 years.
No, we've been there 19 years. 18 and it'll be 19 this summer. And
what do you mean you've never successfully used it? Have you unsuccessfully used it?
Yeah, like one time we tried it out and weren't sure whether the flue was open, and it was not. So we had to put it out with a fire extinguisher.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So then we never tried it again, but I think it works.
Yeah.
I don't really want to, like, it's hard to think about it today when it's like 86 degrees,
yeah.
But maybe someday. Anyway, like, we could still sit around it as if
it were the focus.
As if it were the focus.
Yeah.
We kind of sit near it and play cards sometimes.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
What are you going to do to make the hearth once again the focus of your home?
Mm.
You know, spit roast something in there?
Yeah, I feel like maybe, you know, I don't know, toast some marshmallows. We've toasted marshmallows in our fireplace.
That is definitely like focusing on the hearth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is ancient Roman tradition there.
It sure is. So this is the same root as the word fougasse in French, which refers to a somewhat different bread, but still a flatbread.
Okay.
Fougasse is the one that gets like pulled apart. So it's got holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
In Liguria, it's called fougassa. And in Puglia and Basilicata in southern Italy, focacce.
Okay.
And in Tuscany, it's called schiacciata, which means like smashed, I think.
Hmm.
And we'll talk about the smashing aspect, mm-hmm. which is very mm-hmm. fun to do. And like we said, outside of Italy, if you're thinking focaccia, you're probably thinking of the Ligurian style. It's a leavened flatbread made with a high hydration dough, meaning a super wet dough. Lots of olive oil, coarse salt, usually baked in a rectangular pan and cut into squares. Toppings are usually very sparse compared to pizza, and fresh rosemary and other herbs, either in the dough or as a topping or both, are very common. And it's similar to pizza bianca, but unlike pizza, focaccia is left to rise after you pan it and is usually dimpled with the fingers for a more interesting texture and to give the oil like a place to pool and add some contrast.
So you say, unlike pizza, focaccia is left to rise after being put in the pan. So the pizza instead, pizza bianca would be stretched out.
Yeah, like stretched out dough. And then it goes okay. Right into the oven. Yeah.
Okay, great.
So that's why focaccia has like more and bigger holes than pizza typically.
Is focaccia, is it thought of as a standalone foodstuff the way that pizza is?
Like as a whole meal, you know, people put sandwiches on focaccia, and it's not just an American innovation. It's something that's done in Italy also. So like a focaccia sandwich could certainly be a whole meal, or focaccia with like hearty toppings, mm-hmm. I guess. But I think it's more of like a bread you eat with something for the most part.
Okay. All right. Well, so are there like regional variations? Like you mentioned that there are these different names for what is essentially the same or a similar thing. Do they also vary in terms of flavor or, general ingredients.
Do they ever? So this is all going to be based on like stuff I found on Wikipedia and on a website called tasteatlas.com. So in southern Italy, focaccia is often made with durum wheat flour and topped with tomatoes or potatoes. Like potatoes on focaccia, I think would be really good. I don't think I've ever had that. But like potato pizza is certainly good. In Venice, there is a cake called focaccia veneziana, which is a Venetian panettone. It has nothing to do with the flatbread whatsoever, but got the same name somehow. And I was thinking like this like kind of scratched an itch in my mind that or like raised an itch. What it caused an itch?
Seems like it. I don't know. Did it generate a welt?
It generated a mind welt. and I feel like there are other things like this where something is called by the name of another food that it isn't, like how gingerbread is either a cookie or a cake, but it's not really a bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the best one I could come up with. Do you have any?
Shortbread.
Shortbread. It is sweet breads. Sweet breads. There you go.
Talk about throwing diners off the train.
Wait, sorry, I interrupt you. Who's getting thrown off a train?
Oh, mama? Well, like sweetbreads. I mean,
talk about throwing mama from the train.
Was that Danny DeVito?
Danny DeVito and Anne Ramsey and someone else. Yeah, I watched that movie a ton of times when I was a kid. I really liked it.
Okay, hold on. So moving on. I'm tired of the sweetbreads joke. Okay, go on.
Stuffed focaccia is very popular, especially as celebration food. So in Calabria, there's an Easter focaccia, according to Taste Atlas, made with a combination of flour, yeast, lard, dry, spicy sausage bits, hard-boiled eggs, provolone cheese, pork rinds, butter, and black pepper. That sounds like something.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm going to link to the Taste Atlas article because it has 8 regional focaccia variations, and I'd really only heard of one of them, and all of them pretty much sounded good. So like focaccia messinese from Messina, topped with anchovies, tuma cheese, which I assume is similar to what you would call a tome in French, curly endive, and tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
I bet your dad would have liked that one because he was an endive man.
He was. He was, yeah.
In Tuscany, it's called schiacciata, which is not particularly different from Ligurian focaccia, but there's like a grape variation that's made during grape season called schiacciata all'uva, where you plop fresh grapes into the holes in the bread and sprinkle it with sugar. Bet that's good, too.
I think I've seen this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there other sweet focaccia variants? This is the first one we've mentioned.
Yeah, let me tell you. There's a focaccia della Befana made for Epiphany in Piedmont. How do you celebrate Epiphany?
You know, Matthew, I once made a galette des rois, the like French...
Yes, I do know what that is.
It's like a disc-shaped cake with pastry cream and almond paste that are folded together inside. Not almond paste, frangipane, that are folded together inside. And there's a baby in there.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I mean, I love anything that is almond flavored, like that almond extract, frangipane flavor. So anyway, yeah, when I was in my early 20s, I followed Dory Greenspan's recipe from her book, Paris Sweets. And I made that. And I, believe me, it was an epiphany to remember.
The focaccia della Befana, you hide like an almond inside and whoever gets the almond wins the religion or whatever.
Wins the religion.
Yeah. You get to be Pope, I guess.
I like the idea that there's an almond in there because, you know, with the baby and stuff, like you could choke on that or you could, you know, like bite the baby.
Yeah.
But with an almond, you're supposed to bite it.
I love to chew on a baby though.
Delicious babies.
You're supposed to bite an almond. When is Epiphany, do you think?
It's in January.
Okay, great.
And I remember this because I went to an Episcopal high school.
Okay.
I had to go to chapel every morning, 20 minutes in chapel every morning.
What kind of stuff did they do?
We always sang a hymn at the beginning, sang a hymn at the end, and there was usually a sermon. Sometimes there was like a performance by students or whatever.
Seems like a lot to pack into 20 minutes. I'm impressed.
It was a lot to pack into 20 minutes. Oh, and then somebody from student council would read announcements. And when I was on student council, 2 years, I think.
Sure.
That I love
surprising no
the
one.
Announcements. I love reading the announcements
sure.
in chapel. I also
I feel like
love
you would have been the one saying,
songs.
Like, we got 20 minutes here. Like, we need to do these hymns at 1.5x speed. Move it along.
But I remember learning about Epiphany, and I remember thinking, like, oh, for some reason, it, like, made an impression on me. Like, it seemed like a holiday that somehow made sense to me, whereas like a lot of Christian holidays don't make sense to me. I mean, not just, that just Epiphany,
this one was like a cake oriented holiday.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I don't even remember now what Epiphany is, but I remember a lesson on Epiphany. Hold on, I'm going to look it up. Is Epiphany a feeling? That's a Google offers me one of those.
More of a feeling than a holiday.
Epiphany, also known as Theophany.
Ooh.
In Eastern Christian tradition, is a Christian feast day commemorating the Feast of the Magi, the baptism of Jesus, and the wedding at Cana. Cana? The visit of the Magi to the Christ child, sometimes called Three Kings Day.
Okay, yeah, no, I know those guys.
I do too. Anyway, the traditional date for the feast is January 6th.
Yeah, they were George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, and...
Anyway,
here's
some things. Here's some popular Epiphany customs.
Okay.
Include Epiphany singing, chalking the door.
Whoa.
Having one's house blessed.
Okay.
Consuming the Three Kings cake, winter swimming, and attending church services. I would be fine with doing at least three of those things. I would be happy to do some singing, some winter swimming.
Could the winter swimming be like in a heated pool, or do you have to do like one of those like polar bear?
Like a cold plunge kind of thing. I don't know.
But... Have you ever had a polar bear dip? Delicious.
Okay. Well, how did we get onto this?
Oh, I have more memory lane.
Oh, Epiphany in Piedmont.
Can something be memory lane if it happened like 2 months ago?
Sure.
Wife of the show, Lori, and I went to Tokyo a couple months ago. There was this little teeny tiny bakery. And when I say tiny, it was in a building that was about 5 feet wide called Le Petit Pain.
Perfect name.
They are only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I think. Possibly only Friday, Saturday. They had like ridiculously limited hours. So I'm like, okay, got to try this. I went in, I got some focaccia. It was olive focaccia. It was delicious. I'm not even really someone who likes olives. It was so good.
Oh, I love it.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
Have you ever been to Seawolf Bakery here in Seattle?
I've been to Oxbow, their bakery in Montlake.
Wait a minute. Seawolf owns a second bakery?
I'm pretty sure it's them.
Look it up.
Oxbow Seawolf. Wait, I spelled Wolf W-O-R-L-F. Who is that guy from... Worf. That guy from Star Trek, right? Okay.
Okay, well, anyway, Seawolf is owned by two brothers, very nice people, and it is on Stone Way, just north of Lake Union, and...
Seawolf Baker's highly anticipated bagel shop arrives in Montlake. It is them.
Oh, okay. I totally missed that announcement. Anyway, at Seawolf, they have an olive focaccia. I mean, like, God, I'm not very often near Seawolf, but if I ever happen by there, an olive focaccia is what I grab. Like, a nice, like, square of it. It fits in, like, a little paper pastry bag.
Yes. And the bag gets a little greasy.
Oh, it's so good. It is a fantastic focaccia. I think that it might have a tiny bit of preserved lemon in it, but not so much that you're like, ooh, there's preserved lemon. It's just, I saw it on the list of ingredients on their website and was like, oh, that's interesting.
Not enough to provoke your well-known catchphrase, ooh, there's preserved lemon.
That's right. Okay. Matthew, any place you like to buy focaccia here in Seattle these days?
Well, I've made focaccia twice in the last 3 days.
Wait, you've made it twice?
Yeah.
No wonder your apartment is hot.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't have anything to do with the sun. It's all me.
No, it's all you. Okay. Well, yeah. I'll be over soon to get my share of that focaccia.
Yeah, please do.
Wait a minute. You didn't talk about the recipe you used.
No, I was just about to. We're transitioning into our recipe segment right now.
Okay, here it is.
Which is called I've Got the Receipts.
Okay.
Okay. So first off, I made the cover recipe from the most recent King Arthur baking catalog, and it was for Taiwanese bakery sourdough focaccia by Joy Wong of Baking with Joy blog. This is a sourdough focaccia, which is kind of an advanced sourdough technique because you are using sourdough and also using there's going to be oil involved and it's high hydration. So it's going to rise slowly for a couple of different reasons. I did not get the rise I was hoping for. I don't blame the recipe. I blame myself. I would let Sylvia develop a little more before making it again and probably throw in a little bit of instant yeast. But the flavors were so good. Mm. So the toppings on this are Chinese sausage, corn kernels, scallions, chili oil, and sesame seeds.
That sounds incredible.
So delicious.
Wow. Okay. Can we link to this recipe?
Yeah, it's on the King Arthur website. We'll link to it from the show notes, spilledmilkpodcast.com.
So that's the one you made yesterday. What about today?
So today I made Bon Appetit's shockingly easy no-need focaccia.
And how did it compare? Well, obviously, this one was made with commercial yeast instead of sourdough.
Yeah, and this one is like a Ligurian style, So it actually, the recipe does call for a garlic butter topping, which I skipped because I just wanted a classic plain focaccia with coarse sea salt, and it was great. The one I would say innovation of this recipe is you generously butter the sheet pan before putting the dough in. And that gives it some more browning on the bottom and makes it less likely to stick, which is a thing that can happen with focaccia. It did not stick. The bottom was beautifully browned. It was great. I highly recommend this recipe. It's super easy.
Great. Okay.
And you get to dimple it. We didn't really talk about the dimpling.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So tell me about the purpose of the dimpling.
Yeah. Have you made focaccia?
I've not.
Okay. Well, you should, because the description of so before it goes in the oven, and some recipes have you do it multiple times, and this one just once before you go in the oven, you dimple it by digging your fingers into it all over to make for a more varied texture and give the oil places to sink into the dough and make it pull apart nicely. The way that the author of the Bon Appetit recipe says to do it is as if you were vigorously playing a piano, which is the perfect description. So you really go at it and have your fingers clonk the bottom of the pan.
Oh, okay.
And it's very satisfying.
I'm looking at the recipe now.
Yeah.
So you skipped this garlic butter.
I skipped the garlic butter, which I'm sure would be good.
Okay. But. Yeah. Okay. And I have one other question. I see that this recipe uses honey in it. Did you use the honey? And what do you think about this?
I just used the equivalent amount of granulated sugar.
Okay.
I don't think it matters one way or another.
Is it just to help the yeast along?
Yeah. And I think really if you left it out, you probably wouldn't notice.
Okay. Okay. Great. Okay. This is awesome.
It's not one of those sweet celebration focaccias that we've been talking about. You wouldn't make it for Epiphany. That would probably be a sin. Unless you stick a little almond in there somewhere. If you stick an almond in anything, it's no longer a sin.
Great. Oh, hey, I have a question.
Okay.
Sometimes I think I have avoided making something like this because I don't have... What size pan does this use?
This uses either a half sheet pan or a 9x13 pan, depending whether you want it thick and fluffy for sandwiches or thin and crispy for snacking. And I went thin and crispy.
So that would be a quarter sheet pan.
Half sheet.
Oh, a half sheet.
A half sheet pan is the big-ish one. I mean, obviously the full sheet pan is the big commercial one, but that doesn't fit in a home
oven.
Right,
and a half sheet pan is what we usually use in a home oven.
Yeah.
Is that what you use?
That's what
I
use.
Bigger than 18x13. Oh, no, it's not.
I think it is about 18x13.
I think you're right. Okay. All right. I don't have a 9x13 baking pan with straight sides and nice squared off corners. Mine is more something that you would bake baked pasta in. Do you think this is a problem?
So wait, what do you have? Let's do an inventory of your pans.
So I'm looking at the Bon Appetit recipe and it's got these wonderful little mini videos on it.
Oh, I didn't even watch the mini videos.
And she is using a pan that looks like just a really nice aluminum 9x13 baking pan with straight sides.
and nice like corners. Looks like it's made for baking a cake, right? And I have that kind of pan for brownies in an 8x8 or a 9x9, but I don't have a 9x13 like that. Instead, I have like a ceramic pan.
Okay, that'd probably be fine. Do you have a larger baking pan?
Not that is square or rectangular, except rimmed baking sheets,
okay.
Half sheet pans.
Use the half sheet pan.
Well, but then it's going to be thin and crispy.
But that's what I did, and it's so good.
Okay, fine. Great.
Like, unless you are specifically going for sandwiches, I would go the thin and crispy route.
Okay. Okay. All right, bro.
And if you are specifically going for sandwiches, go to Subway.
Okay. Do we have any segments this week?
Possibly too many. Let's do it.
Okay. You know, we've got a beak of the week.
We've got a beak of the week.
You've got sharp claws so you can perch up high. You've got those wings because they help you fly. You're such an interesting bird. It's Beak of the Week.
This is from listener Matthew, who's also host Matthew.
Yeah, I don't think we accept songs from contributed by listeners for Beak of the Week. We don't accept listener contributed beaks.
Oh, what about birds?
No, not those either.
Okay. All right.
Let me clarify. If you are a bird, we will accept your submission about an interesting human that you saw.
I can't wait for this segment to begin. Matthew, could you please tell me the beak of the week?
Okay. So first of all, if you want to visit a very soothing corner of the internet, let me recommend whatsthisbird.reddit.com. The way it works is someone posts a photo of a bird. Someone immediately replies with a positive ID of the bird with a link to gorgeous photos of it on ebird.org. And as long as you skip anything tagged NSFW, which is like dead birds, you will be very, very happy that you visited this.
Fantastic.
So
okay.
I used it for the first time recently. I'm totally addicted to it and go to it every morning. And like now I think I know something about birds, and like someone will post, I'll be like, oh, that is obviously like a female red-winged blackbird, even though like I've never seen such a thing in real life. But I was recently in Bellingham, Washington, and I saw a really weird waterfowl and it had kind of a white neck and a black body and looked sort of like maybe a weirdly colored Canada goose. And I did some Googling and briefly convinced myself that it was a snow goose, which it absolutely was not.
Okay.
And so despite my terrible, like long range, phone photo, I posted it to this Reddit. And someone immediately identified it as a Muscovy duck, which is an amazingly ugly bird.
I'm looking it up. Muscovy.
Yeah.
Aren't these tasty, though?
Very. Yeah. So probably this was,
an escaped
from a farm, or like hybridized with a bird that escaped from a farm.
What do you think is, so it's got, I actually really like the foliage of this. It looks like maybe the males are black and white. Maybe the females are more of like a brown color with some green on the feathers.
Yeah. But it has a, like a fleshy face mask.
Yeah. It's got this bright red face thing. What do you think would be the purpose of this?
Probably like, a sexual selection thing. Like, look how healthy I am. You can see like my blood coursing through my face in a healthy way. That's my guess.
That sounds good.
I mean, we both have biology degrees, so whatever we say goes.
Absolutely. We also have
blood coursing through our face.
I was drawn because my spouse had a lot of blood coursing through their face.
Yeah, gallons.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
Several gallons.
Matthew, how many gallons of blood do you think have coursed through my face since we started recording this episode?
That is a really good question. Like, I was going to say, like, how do you measure the face? Like,
okay. Well, where does the face begin and end?
Where does the face begin? That's it. Okay. So go to whatsmybird.reddit.com and you'll have a real good time.
All right. We have some spilled mail and I'm going to read it. This is from listener Ben. Hi, Molly and Matthew. Something that my partner pointed out to me recently is that I am, in his opinion, overly concerned about the temperature of food I am eating. For example, I will often take my plate back to the microwave mid-meal to reheat food to its proper serving temperature, or will set an alarm to remind myself to take a salad out of the fridge at a specific time if it tastes better at room temperature. My question is, how much does each of you care about the temperature of your food? And are there certain foods that that you are more particular about than others. Love the show and can't wait to get your thoughts on this very important topic.
You know how when you set an alarm on your phone, you can give it a name? I'm imagining listener Ben like pulling out their phone and it just says salad. And it's like playing that phone alarm sound.
Can I respond first?
Please.
Listener Ben, we are kindred spirits. Mm-hmm. The temperature of my food is extremely important to me. Very important to me. I have become aware of this in part because my spouse, similar maybe to your partner, doesn't care that much about the temperature of their food. So, you know, like
but
I'm
you
the
still
one
love
who
them
makes...
because of all the blood coursing through their face.
Yeah, it's hot. No, but like I'm aware that, okay, let's say I'll make like a pasta or something that I think you really need to get to the table and eat fast, like cacio e pepe or something that begins cooling and congealing instantly. Yep. My spouse doesn't give a fuck. And I am slowly learning, very slowly, not fast enough to like not take this on. That like when I'm like, dinner's ready, I can just sit down and eat my perfectly hot cacio e pepe and my spouse can have their congealed version like 4 minutes yep. later.
Could not agree more.
Yeah, I feel really strongly about this. Yeah, anything that has a tendency to congeal or form a skin, I would also say like pasta carbonara. I also want my soup to be hot. I want, like yesterday we had some leftover Thai style stir-fried beef with basil and chilies. And I had made a fresh pot of rice and we were going to warm up the beef and put it on this fresh hot rice. Well, so that's what I did. But Ash just took their portion of beef straight out of the cold container from the fridge and put it on top of the hot rice. And I was like, babe. I was like really dying inside. But they were like, oh, it's fine. The rice will heat it up.
Wow.
I know. It's shocking.
Yeah. No, I am on team Ben and Molly also, as you probably know, because like I'm always talking about like how picky I am about room temperature food. But like a thing I will do and like did the other day is like if we're getting delivery or takeout pizza, I will preheat the oven so that when the pizza arrives, the oven is on in case the pizza isn't hot enough for me. I have also like probably like among my most Karen-y moments have been like at a pizza by the slice place. If they didn't heat my slice up enough, I will ask them to put it back in. Yes, you there, Molly. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I developed a little bit of a tick around this when we opened Delancey because there's a dining counter in Delancey that faces the pizza oven and the kitchen. And Brandon would be working the pizza oven. I was working in the kitchen, but I could see that dining counter. And you can see from the kitchen that if the pizza lands in front of people and they're in mid-conversation, often they will just let it keep sitting there while they talk or while they keep eating their salad or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, your pizza is losing crucial textural elements.
Yeah, but you can't just like you know, accost the customer and tell them how to eat their food unless you're French. So like, I assume that you and Brandon both put on fake French accents and just told the customer to start eating that pizza.
Where did you get this French thing?
I was just imagining Brandon like telling customers to start eating their pizza. Like, I don't like how that sounds. But then I imagined like a snooty French chef doing it. I'm like, I like this.
I can also imagine it being like a New York Italian
Absolutely.
Kind of thing.
Yes.
Like a particular kind of like sass.
Or like one of those like hot dog places where they yell at you.
Yeah.
Like in Chicago. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. God, thanks for that great question, listener Ben.
Great question, listener Ben. Thank you.
Our producer is Abby Circatella.
Molly has a wonderful newsletter called I've Got a Feeling that you can get at mollyweisenberg.substack.com.
And Matthew has a band called Early to the Airport, and they have an EP out.
Yeah, it's called Departures. It's on all the services. Please keep listening to it because we're getting close to 1,000 streams, which is completely irrelevant and arbitrary, but would make me happy to see it happen.
You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you go to everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com, you can post a picture of a bird and no one will know what it is.
Great. Well, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
I think that was the closing joke.
Okay, I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Hamsterberg.
All right, Matthew, we have a guest in the studio today.
Oh, who is it?
His name is Gilbert.
Okay. A subject matter expert. If we ever do, like one time we said we were going to do a dog food episode, we could have Gilbert on as a guest.
We could have Gilbert on as a guest for pretty much any episode because Gilbert eats literally everything.
Literally anything, food or otherwise.
Yeah. That's right.